The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now we're coming to you from the Tullamore Court Hotel because there's a major conference underway here today, hosted by Bord na Mona, and they are also they invited us to be here. And we want to cover a number of the topics that they are covering in the course of their day-long conference. And I'm joined by John Riley, Head of Renewable Energy at Bord na Mona. John, good morning.
Morning, Pat, and morning to your listeners, and welcome to the Midlands.
Thank you very much. And having driven across the roads, I can understand how boggy the Midlands are. I mean, many of the roads are like roller coasters.
Yeah, I suppose it's a feature of the landscape in the Midlands. You know, but it's not all down to the bogs. I mean, what's quite remarkable at the Midlands is it's a very, very rich agricultural region as well. So our landscape tends to be interspersed with mineral and high quality agricultural lands as well.
I mean, even as I drove here early this morning, the agricultural vehicles on the roads were very evident.
Absolutely.
And it does seem like lush pasture land and, you know, a busy farming sector.
Yeah, it's one of the amazing features of the Midlands is where you see peatlands interspersed with, as I said, very, very high quality agricultural land. So I suppose peat production and all things peat have lived very harmoniously with the agri sector, which is, of course, is vital to the Midlands economy as well.
Now, Bord na Mona has transformed. And it's interesting that if you say to many people of a certain age, Bord na Mona, they think of that piece of music written by John Sheen of the Dubliners and that glowing
Merino waltz.
The Merino waltz and that glowing turf fire.
Sure.
Those days are gone.
Yeah, and it's quite remarkable even for someone like myself who's been with the company for about 17 years. I mean, if you had told me even a decade ago, Pat, that today, the artist formerly known as the Peat Company would no longer have peat in its business model. You'd probably have been taken away by the men in the white coats. But that's the level of the transition we've been through and we've been on. And we can confirm that in 2024, it's the first year in our near 90-year history as a company that there's no longer any peat activity in the company, which
no
is quite
remarkable. No garden peat or anything being harvested.
No, we stopped harvesting milled peat back in 2020. And over the last 3 or 4 years, we've been effectively winding down the stocks of milled peat. So the last iconic peat briquette was manufactured very close to here in the Derrynlough Briquette Factory last June. And the last morsel of peat used for electricity generation was used in our Eden Derry Power Station last December. So massive.
Peat is over.
It's over, Pat. It is over. And, you know, I think from our perspective in the company, you know, the reasons why peat is over, there are many and varied. But the model simply was unsustainable. Unsustainable from an environmental perspective, but also from an economic perspective. The company was losing money. That business model just simply wasn't sustainable. And we had to take a really, really tough decision to transform ourselves. And luckily, we had a renewable energy business that we were able to scale. And, you know, that's the reason why we've been able to exit from peat. And peat was remarkably good to the company, remarkably good to the Midlands, and remarkably good to Ireland in terms of energy security over the years. But the time was right to put it to bed effectively and move on.
When I think back to those days, and I remember passing by the bogs, in fact, doing programmes about the bogs over the years, and, you know, to see the little railway lines cutting their way through the bogs, loads of people out there harvesting the turf, and then, of course, jobs in the briquette factories and so on. So many jobs. What has happened to all of those jobs?
Yeah, the reality is that the peat harvesting and our business was a very, very labour-intensive activity, as you very well described there, Pat. And as we've transitioned out of that, it's been very, very difficult for the company to replace those jobs. And it's not for the want of trying. My God, over the last decade, we have looked at everything and anything to replace the jobs on the bog in the peat production facilities that we had with sustainable employment. And it's been very, very difficult. So the reality is that we had to right-size the company. It's a word we don't often like to use, but that's what we had to do. We had over 1,000 employees, really good colleagues and friends, had to leave the organisation over the last number of years. But the great news is today that we're back now scaling our business. We're back recruiting. We're back employing. The renewable energy business, which is a core plank of what we're doing, We've almost 300 employees in that business today. And with the ambitious plans that we have and our strategy, we expect to see those numbers grow to between 400 and 500.
OK, so let's talk about the title of the company is Board na Mona, mm-hmm. the board of the turf.
Yes.
And now turf is not really part of it, except that renewable energy facilities may be situated on
exactly.
the bogs.
Exactly.
So profile the company for me now. What exactly it's doing?
Yeah, we probably have three major planks, commercial planks to the business today. The renewable energy business is right at the core of what we do. We also have a very vibrant waste management business, which operates right the way across the Midlands. And then our what we call our peatland rehabilitation business, our land and habitats business. The state has entrusted 80,000 hectares of land to Board na Mona way back in the day, and we are the custodians of that land bank. And much of that land bank is suitable for the development of large-scale renewable projects, particularly wind and utility-scale solar projects. But large elements of it are not. So we have to manage all of that, and that's being done by our Land and Habitats Division. Mm. But I think
now, how does the Land and Habitats Division make money? I mean, when you're re-wetting bogs and so on, I mean, there's no profit to be made from it's
what we call a cost centre, Pat. It's like finance or HR or the other support services that are there. The way they make money, actually, is we would rent the land. The renewable energy business pays a rent back to the Land and Habitats Business Division from the income that we get from generating clean, green electricity. So that sustains them in terms of the work that they have to do, rehabilitating the peatlands and managing the peatlands. And I think what's remarkable about our journey, the state founded Board na Mona back in 1932, the old Turf Development Board, principally on the basis of providing energy security for the fledgling state.
Yeah.
And what I love about the story that we have today is that the very bogs, the very land bank that for 60, 70, 80 years provided energy as this economy grew through the 60s, 70s, that land bank is going to sustain security of energy supply in a clean, green way into the future. It's the self-same bogs, it's the self-same areas, and we're now just doing things from an energy security perspective in a different way.
When you look back to the history of the organisation and you talk about to make sure we had energy to power the fledgling state, and we had an economic war, of course, with Britain.
Absolutely.
We were importing British coal. Then the war came, of course, which made those kind of activities difficult. So it has been very important in terms of energy generation since its founding. Now you've got what? Windmills and solar farms.
Yeah, this is a very, very seminal year for the business, the renewable energy business, in terms of its scaling, because we've four major projects under construction at the moment. A large wind farm, 130 megawatt wind farm just out the road here in Derrinlough. We're developing our first utility-scale solar project. We've moved into battery energy storage, so we're developing a battery energy storage project on one of our existing wind farms. And we're completing the refurbishment of the Edenderry Power Station, which formerly would have run on 100% peat.
Yeah.
It's now running on 100% sustainable biomass. But this year, we will reach a very important milestone. When those projects are operational later this year, we'll have 1 gigawatt or 1,000 megawatts of operational assets under our bonnet. So that is scale, like that's relevance. We've moved from a position where we were very much on the margins to where we're very relevant now. And we are, in fact, one of the largest producers of renewable electricity in the Irish market today. And we have a 5 gigawatt development pipeline, which, if we can deliver it, should see us as the largest generator of renewable electricity in the Irish market for some time to come.
Now, because you're building wind farms on bogland or land that was in the bog, it means you're not that close to people. So
yeah,
it should be easier for you than for some of the other operators to develop wind farms.
Yeah, it certainly the size and scale of what we're doing and the fact that we have such a large land bank, we can set our wind turbines further back from residential properties. And that's been very, very important in terms of the growth trajectory that we've been on. Our wind farms tend to be much larger than the average wind farm size. We've developed the largest wind farm in Ireland, the 200 megawatt Onaney wind farm in Mayo.
How many turbines would that involve?
61 turbines, and we've developed that project with our joint venture partners, ESB. But that's in a very, very windy part of the world, Pat, in northwest Mayo. And of course, we have to be very, very careful. Of course, we have neighbours and communities around these wind farms, and we work very, very closely and very, very carefully with them to try and ensure that, you know, these new energy developments, these necessary energy developments are done in a way that keeps that good relationship we've had. And I think I should say, in particularly to the communities across the Midlands and in North Mayo, we could not have achieved what we've achieved in Bordenamona without the support of local communities in the heartland
where
we operate.
Do you enter deals with them to give them deals on power?
What we do is we bring with our developments or renewable energy developments a community benefit package, which has a number of elements to it. But one element is those residents that live closest to the wind turbines actually get it's a bit like the credits that the government have given us all for electricity bills. We do that with if you're located within a specific distance of a wind turbine. But the package is wider. It's very interesting that when we go into communities now to talk about developing renewable energy projects of scale, they really want to talk about the amenity aspects that we create, because we open up these very, very large tracts of land, we build roads in them, and, you know, they're very, very safe places to walk and run and cycle. And it's interesting to see that that's become a really, really important feature to local communities, that amenity access that we're providing.
When you rehabilitate bogs, and I know I'm flicking around a bit here, but do you notice much in terms of the change in habitat for wildlife? Is it discernible?
Absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. I mean, you, and I think this is one of the beautiful things about renewable energy, such as wind and solar. It can live in harmony with nature. It really, really can. If I look at some of our mature wind farms, Mount Lucas, which is just out the road here again, it's 10 years in operation. And to see the range of biodiversity and wildlife that has, you know, come back to that landscape that wasn't there when we were harvesting peat. So we're working very, very hard to make sure that our biodiversity and our rehabilitation programs are very, very focused on seeing renewable energy and biodiversity and amenities for communities all flourish in the one area.
Now, I'm very interested in solar. You know, we're all being encouraged to put solar on the roofs of our private houses, but you're doing it at scale.
Yes.
I mean, how big of a solar farm? How many hectares would you cover with one solar farm?
Yeah, so we're currently developing our first large-scale, utility-scale solar farm, again, in a joint venture with ESB in County Kildare at Timahoe. And that is 108 megawatts of installed capacity. So it's pretty big.
That's very big.
Well, it's as big as the Edenderry Power Station pad is 120-odd megawatts of installed capacity. So it's very, very big. So it's covering about 2,000 hectares of land. But again, the footprint within the site actually is relatively small. There are still large parts of that site that we don't use. What constrains us in terms of the size and scale of these operations is actually grid capacity. There's no point in overbuilding as such if you can't get the power out on the lines. So we're not constrained in Bordenamona by land access. Sometimes people look at our wind farms, Pat, and they go, why don't you put the turbines closer together and put more of them on the site? We wouldn't be able to take the energy output from that on the local power network.
And in terms of the efficiency of the solar, I mean, what kind of efficiency? Obviously, in winter, the days are shorter, you get less.
Yeah.
And then on a cloudy day versus a sunny day, is there much variation there?
There is variation, but it's quite a bit more predictable seasonally than wind is, for example. Now, I mean, again, from my perspective as an energy professional, if you had said to me even 10 years ago we'd be building solar farms in Ireland, I would have said no. But the technology has advanced on, and really where it works well, Pat, is a very, very good bedfellow with wind. And that's part of the concept that we have around our eco-energy parks, where we want to co-locate wind and solar assets. Yeah. We're getting about 40% capacity factors from our wind farms. Solar will be about 10%. If you locate them in on their own individually behind networks, you're not really utilising the grid infrastructure that you're building. So the idea behind our eco-energy parks is to co-locate these assets, and you're utilising the grid 60, 70% of the time rather than 40% with wind or 10% with solar.
Okay, and then battery storage. I mean, it's something that people didn't even contemplate. Even when we talk about offshore wind, we're talking about maybe turning it into hydrogen, you know, using electrolysis to break down water into hydrogen and oxygen, and then burning that hydrogen later on. So battery storage wasn't seen as the solution. How big are these batteries and what's their capacity?
The battery that we're building in our Cloncrean wind farm, and it's connected to the wind farm at the wind farm, the idea being that when excess wind energy is being produced, we can store
low
it.
Low demand at night, for example,
exactly.
And the wind is blowing hard.
Exactly. So you can store that energy and then you have it, the battery's charged, and you can release that during the evening peak when the system is under pressure. With the new topography of the power system, Pat, where we're moving away from centralised fossil fuel power stations, which are what we call dispatchable. So you can turn the dial. If there's gas in the pipe or there's fuel in the shed, you can turn it up and you can give whatever the system wants, you can give it. We're moving to a system now where we're more dependent on the weather in terms of output. But that's manageable, provided you deal with the storage issue. So you're going to see a power system now dominated by renewables, wind in the main in Ireland, and solar, and some biomass and some hydro. And then for the periods when the wind doesn't blow and the sun doesn't shine, we need to deal with storage. And batteries provide a very, very good, what we call short-term storage. So over a period of milliseconds and microseconds, up to minutes and hours. Hydrogen, for example, and we're developing our first green hydrogen project on the on the Mount Lucas wind farm very close to Tullamore here, where that will provide us with more long-term storage. So you're converting that valuable green electron into a green molecule, which is easier to store, and then using that green molecule to produce clean green energy at the times when the system needs it.
But those batteries and how they function, I mean, you're talking about small intermissions where they flick in,
exactly.
Not kind of powering Tullamore for an hour.
No, well, actually, the battery that we're building is a three-hour battery. So when we charge it up, it'll be 25 megawatts of generation, which is quite substantial. Quite substantial.
Sure.
That's sufficient to power a town like Tullamore and other things at that level for about 3 hours. But the problem with batteries and even pumped storage, for example, is it's energy limited. There does come a time when the energy runs out. So we really have to look at longer duration storage, because even on a windy rock like Ireland on the edge of the Atlantic, there are periods when the wind doesn't blow for a long time. That's not something that we didn't understand. We've understood that from all the modelling that we've done for years. We're now much more focused on what the economic long duration storage will be to bring this power system to net zero by 2035 or 2040.
And the final question really is about the grid and how the grid copes. I mean, AirGrid is a state agency, you're a state agency, ESB, you've mentioned partnerships, state agency. I presume you're all talking all the time with each other to try and make sure the grid is fit for purpose.
Absolutely. And it's you know, of all of the things we do, Pat, to get to net zero with the sort of the ambition that the country has in terms of installed renewable capacity, there's two things we need to get right, and that's the planning system needs to deliver robust and quicker decisions, and we need to expand out the network. And partnerships are vital to what we do as a state from an energy perspective. So we've partnerships with SSE, we've partnerships with ESB, we've just recently announced a big partnership with Amazon. And what's really great about all of these companies, both private and public, is they're focused on one single goal, and that's decarbonising their businesses. And that can only be good for the planet, it can only be good for the economy, and hopefully and certainly it'll be good for the Midlands.
All right. Well, John, it's inspiring what you're at, I have to say, and very impressive, that transition from brown to green in Bordnemona. John Riley, who is Head of Renewable Energy at Bordnemona, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.